Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Good morning. It's 8:30 on Monday, March 25th. I'm Desiree Frazier. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. On today's show, it's been 1 year since an EF4 tornado destroyed several towns in northwest Mississippi, including Rolling Fork, Amory, and Silver City, a report from the Gulf States Newsroom. Then, doctors continue to call on lawmakers to address the state's financial crisis in health care. They say Medicaid is a major part of the solution. Plus, black women in Mississippi are being encouraged to participate in a coding boot camp at Jackson State University that prepares them for the future. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. The towns of Silver City and Rolling Fork are still in the process of recovering a year after an EF4 tornado ripped through their communities, leveling homes and businesses. When the tornado touched down in Issaquena County, it began to move northeast, eventually reaching maximum wind speeds of nearly 200 miles per hour. The storm lasted just 71 minutes. In total, 22 people died from the storm, and at least 165 people were injured. Hundreds of Mississippi residents were displaced. And as of mid-March, the State Emergency Management Agency says two people are still living in hotels. On Saturday, a ceremony was held in Silver City to remember the lives lost and the road many have taken towards recovery.
What a miracle. He performed on a mother, too, just like he did way back then.
Danny MacArthur of the Gulf States Newsroom visited the two communities commemorating the storm's anniversary to hear how recovery efforts are going. She speaks with Humphreys County Supervisor Woodrow Johnson about what it's taken to piece these communities back together.
I didn't lose everything, but I did lose my house. It was totally destroyed. And we are in a rebuilding process, and It was a blessing in disguise. Although we lost three lives, my heart goes out to that family and family members. But we're coming back better and stronger. As you can see the shirt he got on, Rebuild Silver City, we're going to do that. We're taking baby steps, but those baby steps going to turn into a giant leap, and we're going to come back strong.
So I guess can you maybe talk a little bit about what the town looked like immediately after the tornado?
It was hard, because you've seen so many people that you played with. You walked through their homes, and me being a leader, I didn't have the answer. But I stayed on my knees and I prayed. And God sent me the leadership that I needed in order to get my people back home and stuff. It's a lot goes on behind the scene than it does out in the front. And a lot of times they didn't see me, but I was on the job doing a lot of things that need to be done. You know, I was trying to rebuild myself and all like that. But we stuck together. Like I say, it's always going to be disagreement. It's always going to be laughter and smile. That's part of life. But the thing is, Silver City is coming back strong.
So, I guess what was the extent of the damage?
Well, as far as dollars is concerned, I can tell you we have applied for $1.4 million in damages here. We have on the pipeline that's on the way, $1.2 million. So we're still short of our goal of getting revenue. And a lot of that is because we had to do a lot of stuff on our own. And the federal government, the way he works is you pay up front and then they'll reimburse you. And the money is coming back slow. So we got to put the little thing on hold until we get some more revenue in order to complete the mission. But that's what we're at to now.
And can you just talk about like what Silver City is like right now, like almost a year out?
Well, the citizens are beginning to get their homes built back. Some is just starting. Some is nearly 75-50% completed, and they are coming back. They can see that light at the end of the tunnel a little bit now, and I can see a glow in their eye that I didn't see 6 months ago. I mean, it was just hardship. Everybody was still couldn't figure it out, but all the agencies and everything told us that it's going to take time, and I can't believe that we could come this far. We did in 1 year, as of now. And Rolling Fork get a lot of attention, but we've been focusing our attention on building back and getting back home, and that's why we are ahead of the curve right now.
Can you talk a little bit about kind of what you hope, like the next steps are?
Well, things I'm working on right now, I'm trying hard to get the Eller apartment built back, to get those people back home. They're not back home yet. The company that owned that resident stays in Current, Mississippi, and houses up. And I've been making several trips up there, and I've been talking to them on the phone. They don't want to rebuild because they say it's just 10% of the population. But that 10% of the population is very valuable to Silver City. And those people don't have it. They're still staying with loved ones and scattered about. I'm also working hard on trying to get a convenience store here in this town. We have no convenience store. We don't have anything. And, you know, late at night, people might need some kind of over-the-counter medication, and they can't get it. They got to drive 7 or 8 miles to get it. And when we just need something here, I'm pretty sure we're going to get it. And I'm also working on getting a park built here for the children to play, and going to name it after the young lady that lost her life. And as well as the Eller complex, I'm going to name, if we get it built back, I'm going to name it after the man that lost his life in there. We already have donated dedicated a street in town to Robert Lee. And we're planning on building a concrete monument and put on the corner of that street for him. So those are the things we're looking at. But we still got projects out there as far as building back on the county side. We're going to build a new fire station here. We're going to build our county barn back and stuff like that. But at those projects down the road, that when we receive those funds, we'll get those built back.
Local officials say many of their government duties are still being performed out of trailers as projects to rebuild municipal buildings continue to move forward. Also, at the rally in Democratic House Representative Tamika James Jones of Belzona, she says the recovery process is going well and hopes it can help these affected communities build back better.
Of course, we stand on the side of optimism, and we want to see Silver City being rebuilt as strong as it was before and better. It is our position as state leaders, county leaders, that we must provide all the resources and funding that we can for this community to be, you know, better than it was ever before, and, you know, stand with all of our constituents, especially in times of like these difficult times and difficult moments. We know that, you know, there are some that have lost their lives, folks that have lost their houses, but we want to make sure that they have an opportunity to come back home. And so we want to provide those resources.
And can you talk some more about kind of like your reaction to like the response, the response after?
Oh, wow. It has been an overwhelming and such a positive and grand response, whether it was for the Rolling Fork area, for Silver City area. We just thank God for everybody that responded, especially in the immediate aftermath. It was, we appreciate all that came, and I say worldwide, because there were contacts that were made from folks that were from across the ocean, to contacts in New York City, as far as California, and excuse me, all across the state of Mississippi, from first responders. And we just couldn't be more grateful, and not to even mention all of our grassroots and the people that were right here, our next door neighbors, our friends, we just thank him so much for everything, whether it was just a phone call, a prayer, sending food. It was just a tremendous, tremendous help. And even as we are a year now out, people are still willing to help and to be a part of, you know, to assist our community.
Is there anything else you think is important to include or that you want folks to know?
Well, we know that this is a long haul, and we are by no means at a point of finishing. So we just say never, you know, forget. You know, this is for quite a while. This is not just for a particular season. So we ask that you continue to pray for our constituents here. Not only pray for them, but if you can come here and volunteer. Volunteer services are always needed. If you talk to your statewide legislators that help to vote to make sure that there are appropriations for different parts of the state, should I say, then make sure you talk with your representatives and your senators and your county leads and your state leads so that they can help to contribute back to, you know, small areas and little pockets of Mississippi that mean so much to Mississippi and creating who she is.
Coming up next, doctors continue to call on lawmakers to address the state's financial crisis in health care. They say Medicaid is a major part of the solution. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.
Hi, I'm Dr. Susan Buttress, host of Southern Remedies, Relatively Speaking. Join the conversation every Tuesday at 11 as we dissect issues that are important to you and your family. That's Relatively Speaking, Tuesdays only on MPB Think Radio.
You've probably noticed that we're not breaking into the programs to ask for your support. That's because so many caring people came forward to help MPB complete our spring drive time campaign. If you missed your chance, please take a few minutes right now to vote for Think Radio by making a contribution. We'll make sure you're counted as a supporter of this not-for-profit source of news and information. Make a contribution at mpbonline.org. And once again, thank you for your support.
Listen to MPB Think Radio at 10 on weekday mornings for shows about your legal rights, modern technology, car repair, and other topics of interest. Programs made by Mississippians for Mississippians on MPB Think Radio.
This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. I'm Desiree Frazier. Doctors in Mississippi are sounding the alarm over the state's need for better insurance coverage. Many hospitals in Mississippi have continuously reported they are in financial crisis, and many have bills that are going unpaid. One solution to this issue, according to the Mississippi State Medical Association, is to expand Medicaid. Dr. John Mitchell is a family physician from Pontotoc and currently serves as president of the organization.
In Mississippi 2023 Public Health Report Card, which was recently presented here on these various steps by the State Health Officer and the Mississippi State Medical Association, it highlighted several key indicators in poor health outcomes for our state. But the positive news is many of those poor health outcomes can be reversed by increasing access to health care. Mainly heart disease, which is identified as the number one cause of death in Mississippi, diabetes, hypertension, infant mortality, maternal mortality. All these outcomes can be significantly improved by increased health care access.
Among the doctors meeting with lawmakers at the Capitol is Dr. Randy Easterling. He's from Vicksburg, and he specializes in family medicine and addiction treatment. He speaks with our Will Stribling.
Unfortunately, these people come in when it's too late, just like Jimmy. And they don't have health insurance, so when they get sick, they don't go to the physician. And by the time they get to the physician, the ironic thing is they cost society a lot more money. They cost you and I more money. Advancing health care or access to health care in our state has an economic component to it, but it pales compared to how much money we spend on taking care of people that could have been treated earlier.
not only costing us more money, it also greatly impacts these outcomes, right? That, you know, the reason that we have the highest in the nation rates of heart disease, diabetes, is because these conditions aren't caught early, yeah. Correct?
Exactly. Exactly. If we could get to some of these people earlier, and it's been shown that people that have health insurance go to the doctor. But when you don't have health insurance, sometimes you have to pay ahead of time, or you get a bill weeks later for hundreds and hundreds of dollars, and most people don't want to run up bills like that, so they just don't go.
Also, there's some critics of expansion have pointed out that, you know, any low-income people who would be covered through traditional expansion can get subsidized plans through the federal marketplace. Uh-huh. Will you talk a bit about how people on those plans their like rates of using care, because if I understand correctly, there can be some high deductibles attached to those plans that prevent people from seeking preventative care.
Well, if you look at the traditional Affordable Care Act, which, you know, has its strong points, it has very high deductibles. Oftentimes, physicians and other health care providers don't take that insurance, and it doesn't pay very well, doesn't cover very well. And in the last 11 years, we have thrown away $12 billion. Now, $12 billion is a lot of money to New York and Florida and Texas and California. It's an awful lot of money to Mississippi. And the large majority of that could have gone into mental health, obstetrics, pediatrics, cancer, and so forth. So it just makes no sense from a medical standpoint, an ethical standpoint, or a financial standpoint to turn this money down.
Coming up, women at historically black colleges and universities, including at Jackson State, are being encouraged to attend a coding boot camp to help prepare them for a possible future in tech. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.
Southern Remedy Healthy and Fit provides information on how you can lead a healthy lifestyle. I'm the host, Josie Bidwell. Search for and subscribe to Southern Remedy on any podcasting app to not miss any episode.
An evening of jazz can be just what the doctor ordered. Join me, Meredith Michelle, with WJSU's Evening Jazz, 7 to 10 weeknights on MPB Music Radio.
We are filled with gratitude to the gracious people who stepped up to tell MPB they love the idea of having Think Radio in their lives. If you missed your opportunity to take part, just visit mpbonline.org. Again, thanks from all of us at MPB.
Our goal at Everyday Tech is to keep your technology not only working, but working for you. I'm the host, Abram Naney, and you can join me and my friends Wednesday mornings at 10 on MPB Think Radio. Or search Everyday Tech on your favorite podcasting app or download the MPB Public Media app.
This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. I'm Desiree Frazier. A coding boot camp is coming to the campus of Jackson State University this summer. The goal, to get more black women in STEM fields. The program is called ESTEAM. It stands for Entrepreneurship, Science, Technology, Engineering, Art, and Math. Leaders of the program say giving black women skills in these key fields can help them be better prepared for the workforce. Our Will Stribling speaks with Melinda Williams, an actress and founder of the Rise and Shine Foundation. That organization is sponsoring the program, and she says it's also aimed at helping to build self-esteem for students going into these fields.
You don't need to have an interest in coding because, as you know, technology, you know, comes in all shapes, sizes, industries. There's all sorts of roles and pathways into industry, but also into the tech industry. So we will have a coding class and introduction to Swift UI. They will be building applications. We will set them up with the technology, both hardware and software, to learn the programming. But also we will have activities that are wellness focused. So we will be incorporating things like nutrition, So we want to have a holistic program that addresses or gives them tools to be whole, mind, body, and soul. Because I don't think you separate your personal well-being from your work well-being, right? They're connected. So if you're having a hard time at work, then that might impact your home, right? If you're having a hard time at home, that might impact your work. So we want to have a program that offers tools for them to be well in their mind, their body, and their soul, and then also skills to be able to thrive in the tech industry or whatever industry using technology.
Tell me a bit about your background and what led you to start your foundation, and then how that led to the Esteem Project and ending up here.
Mm-hmm. So I've been in entertainment since I was 8 years old, really. So from a child, so over 44 years I've been in entertainment. But I will say this, along the way, I've learned other things. You know, you're not acting every day of your life. You're not on a movie project every week. So there's lots of downtime in between for me to do other things. I, about 15 or so years ago, was in what I would call a low place. You know, life has peaks and valleys. I was in a valley, and I didn't like it. And I knew my ability to get myself out of the valley, but I wasn't clear how I would do that. But I knew I needed to do something different. So I went to the store and I bought a book called HTML for Dummies. You remember those books? They still exist, but they're very helpful. And I taught myself my first programming language, HTML. And then I learned a few other languages, and I started building websites for friends, but not for money, because I wasn't even sure that I could really do it. I just needed the opportunity to prove to myself that I could learn, that I could accomplish something new, something that was completely outside of anything I had previously known. I had zero skills or zero experience in that area. But that process taught me more about myself than it did about actually, you know, technology, which it taught me a great deal about technology. It's evolving, you know, every day, really. But it really taught me the power of my own resilience, and that, you know, down but never out. You know, it also taught me that I could shift, I could change, I could pivot. And even if I were known in one area for one thing, that doesn't mean that I can't insert myself into another industry or another area of learning, and show up empowered through it. And so cut to, you know, several years later when I established the Arise and Shine Foundation and started getting a vision for women's empowerment, I thought, I'm going to do this, but I'm going to serve my community, specifically young women in my community, and I'm going to use technology as the tool because it was the tool that empowered me.
Can you talk a bit about your thoughts on the importance of imparting that mindset into young people, that you're not hard-locked to one area?
You know what, I think it's the learning piece, and I think that's key. The learning piece, like, always be learning. It's definitely something I impart into, you know, my friends, my family, but I certainly will impart into the group who participate in the Esteem Project. It's never too late to learn. It's never too late to start again. Again, if you are learning, learning is the most important thing. Sometimes I feel like, you know, yes, you go to these schools and these universities and these institutions of learning to get a skill, but you also go there, you come here to a place like this to learn how to learn, right? So once you leave here, learning doesn't end. Life is constantly teaching you lessons. You have to be in the mindset of, what am I here to learn that can then help to enrich my experience here. And then I also feel like turning back around to give anything to others, it's how can I teach them that they have the ability to learn.
Actress Melinda Williams is founder of the Rise and Shine Foundation, an organization hosting the ASEAM program at Jackson State this summer. This has been Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.